All fields must instead have a certain amount of what are called vacuum fluctuations, in the same way that the pendulum in Chapter 2 had to have zero-point fluctuations. Vacuum fluctuations can be interpreted in several ways that seem different, but are in fact mathematically equivalent. From a positivist viewpoint, one is free to use whatever picture is most useful for the problem in question. In this case, it's helpful to think of vacuum fluctuations as pairs of virtual particles that appear together at some point of space-time, move apart and come back together, and annihilate each other. Virtual means that these particles can't be observed directly, but their indirect effects can be measured, and they agree with theoretical predictions to a remarkable degree of accuracy. If a black hole is present, one member of a pair of particles may fall into the black hole, leaving the other member free to escape to infinity. To someone far from the black hole, the escaping particles appear to have been radiated by the black hole. The spectrum of a black hole is exactly what we would expect from a hot body with a temperature proportional to the gravitational field on the horizon, the boundary of the black hole. In other words, the temperature of a black hole depends on its size. A black hole of a few solar masses would have a temperature of about a millionth of a degree above absolute zero, and a larger black hole would have an even lower temperature. Thus, any quantum radiation from such black holes would be utterly swamped by the 2.7 minus degree radiation left over from the hot Big Bang, the cosmic background radiation that we discussed in Chapter 2. It would be possible to detect the radiation from much smaller and hotter black holes, but there don't seem to be many of them around. That's a pity. If one were discovered, I would get a Nobel Prize. However, we have indirect observational evidence for this radiation, and that evidence comes from the early universe. As described in Chapter 3, it's thought that very early in its history, the universe went through an inflationary period, during which it expanded at an ever-increasing rate. The expansion during this period would have been so rapid that some objects would be too distant from us for their light ever to reach us. The universe would have expanded too much and too rapidly while that light was travelling toward us. Thus, there would be an horizon in the universe like the horizon of a black hole, separating the region from which light can reach us and the region from which it can't. Very similar arguments show that there should be thermal radiation from this horizon, as there is from a black hole horizon. In thermal radiation, we've learned to expect a characteristic spectrum of density fluctuations. In this case, these density fluctuations would have expanded with the universe. When their length scale became longer than the size of the event horizon, they would have become frozen in, so that we can observe them today as small variations in the temperature of the cosmic background radiation left over from the early universe. The observations of those variations agree with the predictions of thermal fluctuations with remarkable accuracy. Even if the observational evidence for black hole radiation is a bit indirect, everyone who has studied the problem agrees it must occur in order to be consistent with our other observationally tested theories. This has important implications for determinism. The radiation from a black hole will carry away energy, which must mean that the black hole will lose mass and get smaller. In turn, this will mean that its temperature will rise and the rate of radiation will increase. Eventually, the black hole will get down to zero mass. We don't know how to calculate what happens at this point, but the only natural, reasonable outcome would seem to be that the black hole disappears completely. So what happens then to the part of the wave function inside the black hole and the information it contains about what had fallen into the black hole? The first guess might be that this part of the wave function and the information it carries would emerge when the black hole finally disappears. However, information can't be carried for free, as one realizes when one gets a telephone bill. Information requires energy to carry it, and there's very little energy left in the final stages of a black hole. The only plausible way the information inside could get out would be if it emerged continuously with the radiation rather than waiting for this final stage. However, according to the picture of one member of a virtual particle pair falling in and the other member escaping, one wouldn't expect the escaping particle to be related to what fell in or to carry away information about it. So the only answer would seem to be that the information in the part of the wave function inside the black hole gets lost. Such loss of information would have important implications for determinism. To start with, we've noted that even if you knew the wave function after the black hole disappeared, you could not run the Schrödinger equation backward and calculate what the wave function was before the black hole formed. What that was would depend in part on the bit of the wave function that got lost in the black hole. We're used to thinking we can know the past exactly. However, if information gets lost in black holes, this is not the case. Anything could have happened. In general, however, people such as astrologers and those who consult them are more interested in predicting the future than in retrodicting the past. At first glance, it might seem that the loss of part of the wave function down the black hole would not prevent us from predicting the wave function outside the black hole. But it turns out that this loss does interfere with such a prediction, as we can see when we consider a thought experiment proposed by Einstein, Boris Podolsky, and Nathan Rosen in the 1930s. Imagine that a radioactive atom decays and sends out two particles in opposite directions and with opposite spins. An observer, who looks only at one particle, can't predict whether it will be spinning to the right or left. But if the observer measures it to be spinning to the right, then he or she can predict with certainty that the other particle will be spinning to the left, and vice versa. Einstein thought that this proved that quantum theory was ridiculous. The other particle might be at the other side of the galaxy by now, yet one would instantaneously know which way it was spinning. However, most other scientists agreed that it was Einstein who was confused, not quantum theory. The Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen thought experiment doesn't show that one is able to send information faster than light. That would be the ridiculous part. One can't choose that one's own particle will be measured to be spinning to the right, so one can't prescribe that the distant observer's particle should be spinning to the left. In fact, this thought experiment is exactly what happens with black hole radiation. The virtual particle pair will have a wave function that predicts the two members will definitely have opposite spins. What we would like to do is predict the spin and wave function of the outgoing particle, which we could do if we could observe the particle that's fallen in. But that particle is now inside the black hole, where its spin and wave function can't be measured. Because of this, it's not possible to predict the spin or the wave function of the particle that escapes. It can have different spins and different wave functions with various probabilities, but it doesn't have a unique spin or wave function. Thus, it would seem that our power to predict the future would be further reduced. The classical idea of Laplace, that one could predict both the positions and velocities of particles, had to be modified when the uncertainty principle showed that one couldn't accurately measure both positions and velocities. However, one could still measure the wave function and use the Schrödinger equation to predict what it should be in the future. This would allow one to predict with certainty one combination of position and velocity, which is half of what one could predict according to Laplace's ideas. We can predict with certainty that the particles have opposite spins. But if one particle falls into the black hole, there is no prediction we can make with certainty about the remaining particle. This means that there isn't any measurement outside the black hole that can be predicted with certainty. Our ability to make definite predictions would be reduced to zero. So, maybe astrology is no worse at predicting the future than the laws of science. Many physicists didn't like this reduction in determinism, and therefore suggested that information about what is inside can somehow get out of a black hole. For years, it was just a pious hope that some way to save the information would be found. But in 1996, Andrew Stominger and Kumram Vafa made an important advance. They chose to regard a black hole as being made up of a number of building blocks called P-brains. Recall that one way of thinking about P-brains is as sheets that move through the three dimensions of space and also through seven extra dimensions that we don't notice. In certain cases, one can show that the number of waves on the P-brains is the same as the amount of information one would expect the black hole to contain. If particles hit the pea brains, they excite extra waves on the brains. Similarly, if waves moving in different directions on the pea brains come together at some point, they can create a peak so great that a bit of the pea brain breaks away and goes off as a particle. Thus, the pea brains can absorb and emit particles like black holes.